From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, ever-the-heart-throb of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes. Oh, hey, Bob. Oh, hey, everybody out there.
Oh, hey there, copyright infringement.
Yes. Don't have a lawsuit against me, please. But,
Count Panic, it's, today's a special day.
Today is a special day.
It's Tuesday. We're doing Bob After Dark.
Yes. Yes. And that's the thing. It's Tuesday. Summer solstice winding down here. Fall solstice beginning in just a few short hours here as we're filming this. Some say the veil is at its thinnest, Bob.
We are getting there. Oh, actually, okay. You know what? It's finally that time of year where you can say such a thing and it makes perfect sense.
All right.
Yes.
And that kicks in at midnight?
That kicks in soon, actually. We're under the moon for it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Don't we have a moon tonight?
We have a moon. It's the harvest
moon. I mean, there's a moon every night.
There's.
But tonight's
the harvest moon, man.
The harvest
moon.
This is
we're getting to the point where the veil will be at its thinnest. And Count Panic, we have a guest on the line. As the new era of Bob After Dark has been taking over, we have a guest, and we're going to introduce said guest here in just a moment.
All right.
First, we need a weekend update from you.
Bob had a great weekend.
Bob did have a great weekend.
Bob, I had a great weekend. I'm telling you, Bob, your name is Bob.
I'm Bob.
And I'm saying I had a great weekend.
Yeah, you also said I had a great weekend, which I did.
Bob had a great weekend as well. What did I get done? I got some stuff done. A nice relaxing weekend, of course. Taking it all in, I saw. This has nothing to do with the paranormal, but Mick Foley, the wrestler, at the Hobart Art Theater.
How was that?
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Got my book signed. So that was nice.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, not my book, his book.
Did you have a nice day signed?
Yes,
is that the book you got?
Yes.
Yeah, he had a couple books.
Yeah, have a nice day.
That's his classic.
He's a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah.
He's had a few, but that was a good time. And other than that, had a great weekend here, Bob. How about you? I know you had a great weekend.
I had a great weekend. I was down in Indianapolis at Gen Con. Playing some board games and dressing like a Ghostbuster. And I took the weekend off. It was supposed to be my off time. And we'll talk a little bit about what I did here a little later. But I actually got to do an interview with a paranormal podcast or paranormal board game creator. So that was pretty amazing.
Did you?
I did, because I can't stop working, even though I'm on vacation. I can't stop working.
Yeah, I saw you out and about there. It was like a fun time.
It was a good. It was an amazing time. I had a blast at Gen Con. I hung out with the Pawstar crew, and I had a really good time.
Perfect.
Yes. Now, Count Panic. Yeah. Before we dive into our guest here, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly paranormal podcast where we talk about everything legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, how does Count Panic take his coffee?
Well, right now I'm taking into a bottle right here, so I got from the store. But other than that, a couple creams, a couple sugars. No matter what size, a couple creams, a couple sugars.
Fair enough.
You?
I don't drink coffee.
I thought you do.
I don't. Yeah, you
tea?
Think I do drink tea.
There you
I don't
go.
I don't do coffee.
Nope.
I milk by itself, absolutely.
I don't know about that one. Milk by itself.
I'll drink milk all the time, man.
Sweet. Are you one of those people that drinks milk with your sandwiches?
No, because I don't eat sandwiches. I have like a grilled cheese. I'll have milk with like a peanut butter and jelly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, Count Panic, new era, yes. Bob. We were just talking about this before the show. We had more guests in the span of a month than we have had in the entire history of Bob After Dark.
We got a few more left here.
We do. We have a few more left, and then I promise we're going to – this was an experiment. But we always find the coolest guests.
They're great guests.
Oh, they're great. And it's a great topic. And tonight's guest actually is something near and dear to my heart, and that's filmmaking.
All right.
So, fun fact for all of you guys that may not know in the Children of the Night fan base, I actually went to film school. Well, I studied film in a school. Yeah.
A little different, I guess.
Yeah, that's where me and you met.
Yeah.
We went to college together and studied broadcasting and film. And
the great film school of Purdue.
The great film school of Purdue. We didn't go to a film school. We studied film at a school meant for engineers.
I think Scorsese went there. I'm
sure he did. Yeah. But this particular guest made a wonderful documentary that we're going to be talking about here. And because it's the new era, Count Panic gets to introduce the guests.
Well, I think they're there. It happened right before the show. So let's see. I believe now we have Shane Free. He made a great documentary. Let's see if Shane's there. Shane, are you there?
I am here, guys.
Perfect.
I am joining you today, and it's great to be here.
Shane, thank you so much for coming on Bob After Dark.
Well, I'm thrilled to be part of your new format here with some guests. So I hope I don't screw it up.
Absolutely not. In fact, you were actually one of the most excited when I saw that you agreed to come on this, because your documentary I saw it and I was like, wait, no kidding. This is such a cool story that no one ever really talks about. And I told Count Panic here, I was like, we need to track whoever made this down so we could talk about it, because we did an episode about this recently-ish, and it still might be fresh on people's minds. And I want you to, we'll have you kind of bring it about. But before we talk about the project, let's talk about you. Who are you?
Well, my name is Shane Free. You know, I also a film school guy. I went to film school in Boston, but, you know, I moved out to Los Angeles in 1999. And I kind of fell into the world of editing. So I became a video editor for movie trailers, and then it evolved into video game trailers. And I just had this really good editing career. But on the side, I always, you know, wanted to be a filmmaker and make films. And there's stories that interested me. And that's kind of how this film came about. I'm from York, Pennsylvania, where the story takes place. I remember hearing this story of the Nelson Raymeyer murder growing up, I believe, from my father. I, you know, it was always kind of a story that was around, because it was kind of a big story for that area. And that is something that kind of drew my attention in about 2012. And I started looking for a documentary on it. I'm like, well, I'm going to know more about this. I'm going to find the documentary and watch it. And then I discover there is no documentary. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe that's something I can make, because this was not touched. And I like the idea of working on a subject that was not touched. And that's how this all came to be. So I recently relocated back to the East Coast. I'm now in New York, and here we are.
Here we are talking on Bob After Dark, and you were up late, so I appreciate you doing that.
No problem. This is my go-to. I love this time of night. I'm a night owl, so
that works out great. I am not. So for a paranormal show called Bob After Dark, fun fact, guys, I am not a night owl, but oh. I force myself to be for the paranormal world. So tell us a little bit. Let's rejuvenate the story, and I want you to tell it, because you're the one that just worked on this wonderful thing. So give us a rundown of the story, and then we'll talk about the filmmaking process that you had to do to make this come to life.
Sure. So, you know, in 1928, there was this farmer and healer named Nelson Raymeyer, kind of a hermit, kept to himself. People thought he was a little odd, but really, you know, there was nothing to him. He just kind of did his work on the farm, sold his fruits and vegetables at the farmer's market, things like that. And he kind of became known around town as a healer. And he did this thing called powwow, which is you know, kind of a healing practice based on faith, Christianity, and people would come to him with ailments and of all shape, all different variations. It could be as simple as I'm not feeling well, or I have a wart on my hand, can you remove it? Or something more serious, like I have cancer and you need to, you know, get this out of me. So he had all these kind of remedies that he would use on the people around town. But what happened was there was a guy named John Blymeyer who worked in town, and he started having a run of incredibly bad luck. And he went to another powwower in the area named Nellie Knoll. She was kind of known as the River Witch of Marietta. And he asked her, "What is going on with me? Can you figure out this string of bad luck that I've been having?" So she basically put a dollar bill in his hand. And when he removed his hand, he saw the face of Nelson Raymeyer. And she said, "That's the man who's causing you problems." Basically, John Blymeyer was like, "Wow, this is really interesting. This hermit is giving me this run of bad luck." And John Blymeyer happened to work with another man named John Curry, who was also having bad luck in his world. So basically, he said to John Curry, "Hey, look, this guy is causing me problems. Maybe he's causing you problems, you know, and we should probably take care of it." So they got another guy named Wilbert Hess, who was a bigger fella, who could come and go down to Nelson Raymeyer's house. And in order to break this curse that they thought was upon them, they needed to get a lock of Nelson Raymeyer's hair and his book of spells, and burn the book of spells and bury the hair, the lock of hair, like 6 feet in the ground. And that would rid them of this curse, and everything would be well in their worlds again. Of course, everything went horribly wrong, and that's kind of where the story's left. And I won't really go any further in case people want to visit the story, because it is kind of interesting how it all unfolds there at the end.
That's I appreciate you summarizing it, because it's a really interesting case. And it's one of the few cases you find in, like, true crime that parallels into the world of the paranormal and witchcraft and, you know, all the things we talk about on the show. And what draws me to the story and what draws me to your documentary is the fact that typically with true crime, you get a cut and paste story. Somebody murders somebody, and then it's not. It is what it is, right? And usually you have like a mind of a serial killer or something, but this wasn't that. This was something faith-based. This was something mythical-based, mysticism-based, right? And that's such an interesting story to tell, because you don't hear about that kind of a thing, especially, and this made national news, as you everybody watch, go watch the documentary, by the way, and we'll plug all that here in a moment. But in your research, how much attention did this story get?
It got a lot of attention. Matter of fact, I believe reporters came from all over the world to cover this story, because it was actually, I think it was the first witchcraft trial since the Salem witch trials, if I'm remembering correctly. I made this in 2015, so I'm not as sharp on it as I used to be. But I mean, the fact that there was someone on trial and the defense was, I needed to get rid of a curse that was placed upon me by Nelson Raymeyer, who was essentially a witch, in so many words, was something that people were just like, this is insane. I mean, this can't be a real thing. And I know they never wanted to bring witchcraft into the trial, but I believe it came out, and that's kind of what really drew the national attention.
How hard was it to find, I guess the term I want to use is credible research for such a strange story? Because this, you know, you can lose yourself in something like this. At the end of the day, reporters have to report on facts. And these were very interesting stuff that went along with it. So how hard was it for you to pull up evidence or documentation about this from the time that wasn't probably somebody, if I was a reporter back then, would be losing my mind trying to report on this? So how hard was it to find research that was, I guess, level-headed is what I'm trying to get at.
It was hard. I mean, you're talking about something that happened in the late 20s. So, I mean, it was all about finding people that were in some way connected to the story. And that was my main way I operated. And luckily, I started making this or researching it in 2012. So there were a handful of people that were actually quite connected to the story. I have a woman in there who saw these men walking down to Nelson Raymeyer's house when she was a little girl. So, I mean, I had firsthand a witness to someone who literally knew Nelson Raymeyer and knew who these men were. One of the big things I drew from was a book that an attorney wrote in town called The Trials of Hex, J. Ross McGinnis. And he's basically an expert on this subject. So he used a lot of the actual transcripts from the court hearings, from the trials, And that was what I drew a lot of my research from, and just talking to the people in the area. Like I said, I was able to get connected to people in all of the families, the John Blymeyer family, the John Curry family, as well as the Wilbert Hess family. And I'm glad I did it when I did it, because literally after I premiered this movie, and maybe a year before, a lot of them just started passing away.
Right.
So you watch my movie now, there's about five or six people that are no longer with us that are in it. And I happen to get their, you know, only sit down interview on the subject. So I'm really fortunate and proud of the fact that I was able to, you know, get this on film and document this story before they passed away. And I think they tell it really well. I wanted to really tell the story without narration. And I wanted to do it all through the words of the people who were connected to the story.
That's really interesting. And it's actually really, it's heartbreaking to think that the people that knew the truth aren't here to be able to share the story with us anymore. And it's even, again, everybody, I'm going to urge you several times during this interview to go watch the documentary, but it's so interesting that you were able to find people that lived it, you know what I mean? That were there. And that, from a storytelling perspective and from somebody in documentary filmmaking, is so much different than, you know, narrative. That had to have been a surreal moment, I'm assuming, interviewing these people, right?
It was. And, you know, it was tough. You had to gain the trust of the people as well, because this is a to a lot of them, it's a very touchy subject. Especially to the family of some of the killers involved. And especially like the woman who the oldest interview subject that I had, who, you know, was familiar with Nelson Raymeyer because her father knew him and things like that, Jeanette Harvey. It took me 3 months to gain her trust so she would let me interview her. It wasn't like, hey, I'm making this movie, let me interview you. It was like, I had to fly back and forth, because at the time I was living in Los Angeles, and it took me a few visits to, you know, I had to basically really get inside her inner circle there for her to, you know, let me do it. And I'm so glad I did, because she's it's special. It's a special interview that she gives, I think. And she's great. I mean, she tells her side of the story and her experience really well, as they all do. I'm really happy with the way everyone, it's very honest. My whole thing was, I wanted to be honest and not put any slant towards the story, what my beliefs were, what happened, or what I believed. I wanted it to be strictly from the people who experienced it. I wanted to just tell it as factually as I could without any slant.
That's a good way of doing it, in my opinion. Count, what do you got to say?
So that's fascinating. The fact that, you know, there's people on this flick that, you know, that's history right now.
That's
living history. That's going to live on forever. They may not be around right now, but that continues on throughout time. And that's a fascinating fact always for me. The fact that you got this made, you know, before all these figures pass, it's something special in a way, too. You got to feel a sense of emotional gratitude about that.
Absolutely. It was a passion project. And, you know, to be a filmmaker, it has to be a passion project, because it's just too hard. I mean, making a movie is just so hard that if you do not love it, if you do not love your subject, especially when it comes to documentary, because, you know, you're going to spend, I spent 2.5 years on it, because, you know, I had to have a day job while I did it. So it was a very piecemeal process. It took me, you know, 4 or 5 trips back east shooting it. And then you're dealing with a subject that takes place in 1928. So I don't have a lot of audiovisual material to work with to fill in the gaps. So that was the other tricky part of making the project.
What was the reaction of the locals while you were there? So this is going to be a 2-part question. The first part of the question is, you grew up in that area, right? Where all of this happened. How does that story reflect on the people that live there now? Is it like that kind of legend that you tell around the schoolyard, or is it very much a hush hush, can we not talk about this kind of a thing?
I think it depends what family you're talking to. If you're a member of the Rehmeyer family, and there's still so many descendants of the Rehmeyer family around the area, a lot of them do talk about it because they're all about making sure Nelson Rehmeyer's name isn't drugged through the mud as some crazy witch doctor, you know? So that's kind of their whole thing. They try to keep his spirit alive. It's, look, this guy was just trying to help people. That's what he did. He kept to himself. Just because you keep to yourself doesn't mean you're a weirdo. Just because you're a hermit doesn't, you know, mean you're a weirdo. He just literally liked to help people. And that's what he did for a lot of the community. And then if you go to the other side, like the John Blymeyer family, John Blymeyer, you know, was known to have mental illness. So a lot of those people are trying to also raise the issue of, look, mental illness back then was not as talked about as it is today. So he couldn't get the help that he needed at that time, you know. So they're also trying to raise that awareness and try to like make people understand that, look, this guy just wasn't a insane murderer. You know, he had a lot going on upstairs. So that could have also led to this tragic circumstance situation.
Sure. And then, so what was the reaction with the locals knowing that you were bringing this story to light? Because even when I did my episode for the podcast on it, it was not easy trying to find things outside of the stories that have been published about it. Trying to dig research for this, I'm just doing it for an episode of a podcast. It, you know, I do it, it's archived, it's done. You're the one that needs to piece together, you know, a whole thing and trying to get all the facts from all the different sides of the story. So what was the locals' reaction knowing that you were there and you were bringing this story to surface and you were bringing attention back to it?
A lot of cooperation for the most part.
That's great.
I had some people that were very much against it. Just, they wanted me to just leave it alone. But for the most part, I would say 85-90% of people were pretty comfortable. People who wouldn't grant interviews are usually just people who aren't comfortable in being in front of a camera. It wasn't because they were against the story. I did have one guy who was, and this is an interesting story. I had one guy who was a bit of a problem in terms of, there was a man who claimed he had Nelson Rehmeyer's book of spells, the book that the men went to get from the house. He claimed he had the original book that Nelson Rehmeyer owned. So I said, okay, great. Can I come, you know, and see it and interview you? And he tells me where to go. And I get there with my camera and my producer, and I walk in. He goes, put the camera down for now. I need to get to know what you're doing here. I need to, you know, trust you a bit more. I need to know a little bit more about you. I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's nothing new. I've had that with some other people, but he was very combative with me to the point where I'm just like, look, I confronted him. I go, look, you don't have this book. You don't have it. And you go, you're pulling my leg. This book does not exist anymore. There's a couple people that claim they have it. So if you actually have it, let's see the book. And he would not show it to me. And he basically kicked me out of his place. But that was the only person that was really kind of aggressive in terms of not wanting to share what he knew. And I told him, look, I could put you in the movie regardless, but I'm giving you the opportunity to tell your side of the story. But if you don't want to do that, you know, I can just say you're just one of many who claim to have a fully half. So it's your choice. But he chose not to be interviewed.
That's fair. And I'm assuming you didn't get to see the book.
I didn't get to see the book. He claimed it had blood stains on it from the murder. I mean, wouldn't you, if you had that, I feel like you'd be pretty willing to show it. I wasn't going to take it from him. He could have just literally showed me, and he did not have any interest in doing that. I don't know. I don't know why he wanted me to even go there if he had no interest in being interviewed on camera. I told him, I go, it's a documentary. If I can't interview on camera, it's pretty pointless.
That's just hearsay at that point. It's fascinating that he just approached you and said he had the book. I mean, that thing, and I hate to quote Indiana Jones here, but that thing belongs in a museum if he has it.
It does.
I mean, I think it's past the statute of limitations at this point if we needed it for a crime scene evidence. That thing belongs in a museum or the Bob After Dark Occult Museum. So, Guy, if somehow you found this podcast from Chicago, let me know. I'll buy the book from you.
Well, J. Ross McGinnis, the lawyer who I interview in the who wrote Trials of Hexes in the movie, claims he has the book, you know? So, you know, I saw the book he had, and it's not old. It's not nearly old enough to be the book, but yeah, it'd be awesome if someone had that book.
In your opinion, do you think it exists still?
Oh, I doubt it. If it did exist, it would be falling apart somewhere in an attic. I would be very surprised if it was anywhere that anyone could find.
Bob's going to search for it now.
Listen, if I have to go hang around the Pennsylvania Dutch areas to go start knocking on doors of Meta Knights and be like, do you have that book? I'm looking for that book. They're probably going to look.
They probably know what you're talking about, too.
I'm sure they do. So this is going to be a question about you and your background. So prior, obviously, I got you on the show from the paranormal aspect, but prior to this, what drew you to the story? Was it hit the historical aspect, or was it the fact that there wasn't anything to it? You grew up in the area, or was it that maybe you were, I don't know, because have you ever dived into like the paranormal, the culty world before this in your work?
I have. To answer your question, all of the above interested me.
Sure.
I think the most intriguing aspect was it wasn't done yet, because there's so many documentaries out there that rehash the same subject over and over and over again. And I just like the idea that I could be the one that made the first documentary on this particular subject. And, you know, you can make one now if you'd like, but, you know, there's no one else to talk to. So that was the main thing that intrigued me. I've always had an interest in the paranormal. Absolutely. When I was a young kid, when I was in high school, I had a paranormal experience in Gettysburg. And ever since then, I've had definitely a love for the unknown and the paranormal. I did like an investigative documentary about the paranormal. This won't see the light of day, because I don't think it's very good, but I was just playing around and I went to some places and I just kind of did amateur ghost hunting. So yeah, the paranormal always interested me for sure.
Do you think I was just gonna let you skip over the fact that you had a paranormal experience on my show and not tell me about it?
I didn't. I just wanted to get through that for what I was finishing up there.
Would you like to share it?
Absolutely, I would.
You're in the right place, and this is the perfect place, because I'm not going to judge you.
Let me set the scene.
God, this is it. I'm getting it from a storyteller, dude. This is what I like.
The dark and stormy night.
A dark and stormy night. Let's hear it.
So I was in high school. My friend Doug, who was a good friend of mine, lived in the area, but him and his family moved to Gettysburg. And as we know, Gettysburg has a hotbed of paranormal activity. It's just obviously the amount of lives lost there, it's a breeding ground for the paranormal, really. And he invited me up there one weekend, me, him, and I think about three of his friends. He told me this story that occurred at a place called Spangler Spring. And at Spangler Spring, a lot of battles took place there, but there was a story outside the battles where a woman supposedly committed suicide there because her fiance broke off their engagement. So the story is she committed suicide there, and she walks the grounds as this woman in white, lady in white, right? So he's like, let's go down there, and if we like break a promise to each other, she will appear. That's the legend. So we all hop in the car. Look, no alcohol, no drugs are happening. This is just, none of us did any of that at that point. So I'm just setting that up because our brains were clear.
Sure, right? Sure, absolutely.
So we drive down to this area called Spangler Spring, and you're really not supposed to be in the park after dusk, but we were able to get in before the park closed. So we hung around until everyone was gone. We drove up to the Spangler Spring area. We parked our car, turned off the lights. And when you're inside, when you're in the park, there's no lights in there. It is pitch black, right? only thing lighting the way were the headlights. And there are a lot of big boulders within this area of Spangler Spring. And we made some silly promise and then somebody else in the car broke it. I don't really remember what it was at the time. But the idea was, let's turn out the headlights and let's just sit here now and see what happens. Of course, we're thinking nothing's going to happen. We won't see anything. This is ridiculous. We all kind of picked a spot to look in. We thought the best strategy for this, for us seeing something would be, you know, you look to the left side of the car, you look to the right side of the car, you look to the front, et cetera. So we all just had our spot. My spot was this like big boulder right in front where the headlights were. Now we turned the headlights off and gave our eyes time to acclimate to the darkness. And then once they did, the moonlight kind of allowed us to see, you know, to see in front of us. Now I was just sitting there looking at this large boulder and I started to see something that looked like, the only way I can describe it is a blurry sphere. I wore glasses at the time. And when I take my glasses off, that blurriness that you see, if you wear glasses, I think you do. I'm trying to see you. Yes.
Yes, I do. I got the bad vision.
But you know, when you take your glasses off and just that fuzziness that you see, I saw that, but that fuzziness was concentrated into like a spherical shape. This spherical shape started to kind of grow and it formed not into a woman in white, but into these two figures that I remember specifically that had the soldier hats on, you know, those Gettysburg hats that you see the soldiers wear. I told everyone in the car, I go, look straight ahead, but look, there's something right there. And it was these two march. I mean, they were, it looked like they were side by side in a marching formation, right? Of course you couldn't see from below the knee. It was just the knee up. There wasn't much detail. It was more shadow like, but it was fully formed, right? Then they started to come towards the car. And that's when we kind of freaked out because that's a freaky thing. We had to put the car in reverse quickly. You know, we're on this gravelly road and then you spin out and we're trying to, we start driving forward. I remember looking in the rearview mirror and I saw them still coming, now gliding at a quicker clip. And we just drove out of there. I remember the rest of that night, any sound that was made from anywhere, I was jumpy. I mean, it was crazy. It was the weirdest. It was a freaky moment, I have to say. And I remember it to this day, all these years later. It affected me. It was very crazy. And I had four other eyewitnesses in the car with me.
That's spooky. Wow. This was, said this was at Gettysburg, right?
This is at Gettysburg, yes.
Gettysburg. That's, what an interesting story. And you had to summon this particular spirit by breaking a promise.
Well, that was supposed to summon this woman who killed herself there, but that's not even a proven story. That's just the story that's going on.
That's the legend, right?
That's the legend. But what we saw looked like soldiers.
Right.
Which actually makes more sense when you're in Gettysburg.
Right. Huh, that's interesting. That's fascinating is what it is. And it
even, you guys should do like some shows down in from there, because
We'll put it on the docket. You want to put that in the docket for next year, Count?
Sure.
We'll go to,
it's
we'll,
in the budget, right?
It's in the budget.
You want to stay at the Cashtown Inn, or you want to stay at the Farnsworth House. Those are the two haunted inns.
You're writing those down. Shana, I got to ask, because I ask everybody who comes on my show, everybody from all walks of life. There's three streets in front of you, right? You got your path of believing, which is I am a true believer in all things weird and spooky. You have the middle path, which is, yeah, I believe it, but, you know, some things I'm skeptical on. And then there's the straight skeptic path. Where do you lie?
Well, let me tell you my theory on all this.
Sure, absolutely. And your theory is welcome.
I'm in the middle. What would you say the middle path was?
Middle is very, I believe it, but there's certain things I'm skeptical about, and, you know, maybe I need a little bit more proof before I dive into the believing side full on.
Correct. Okay. I would say I'm middle path, and I'm going to tell you why. In today's world, where we all literally have a phone and camera and video camera in our pocket, the fact that we still do not have some definitive proof that can be just shown on CNN that just says ghosts are real just is interesting to me. I mean, there's cameras everywhere, yet we still don't have that definitive, here it is, there's the afterlife. I mean, why not? I mean, why? I mean, that's why Bigfoot to me does not exist. We would have caught him someone would have him on camera by now. It's my same kind of feeling with ghosts, although there are a lot of things out there though that you do see that are caught on tape that are kind of strange, but still I want that piece of video that brings skeptics and believers together. And it's just, there it is. There's no denying it.
That's a good way of looking at it. I can appreciate that, especially on your end, being a person of talent of AV, you want to see it in the AV proof, which makes total sense.
Correct. Yeah, that's how I'd like to see it. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. That's, I think, something that would really help me.
How do you explain your sighting at Gettysburg then?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, were my eyes playing tricks on me? Was I so much in my head wanting to see something that I saw something? That's that whole thing. Sometimes when you want to see something or you want to believe, your brain's very powerful. It can make that happen for you. But what I can't explain is the other people in the car who saw it. Yeah. So
other people,
that's a big deal.
You second guess yourself when it's just you seeing or hearing things, but when other people take part in it as well, hard to explain that.
Exactly. Exactly. It is. And that was, you know, we're talking, you know, early 90s. So
sure.
We didn't have any way of, I didn't have a video camera then. They were very expensive then. And we didn't have one. That's when you had the, you know, the Hi8, right?
Oh my God. Bust out the VHS camcorder.
the VHS camcorder that you would literally have the VHS recorder slung over your shoulder.
Yes, and it's a big shoulder mount, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
We got any of those kicking around in the studio, count? Maybe we could shoot Bob After Dark on that.
I think we were trained on those.
The mini DV tapes, Purdue, man. When we were in school, DV tapes.
Our cassette tapes.
The mini DV, that's what we had. Yeah. we put B&H Photo to work when we sent for those. What are you doing with Beta in 2012?
We thought we were top of the line in 2012 learning with that stuff, but then little did we know when we left college, nobody had that.
No one had Beta. No. Jeez. No, Shane, we got a couple more minutes left with you, so let's talk about the documentary a little bit more. Where can people see it? Where can people find it? And then let's chat a little bit about where people can find you.
Yeah, so you can, it's all over the place, but if you just go to hexhollowmovie.com, that'll give you places to be able to watch the movie. The easiest way to do it is go to Amazon. It's on there. It's on, I keep getting picked up by a lot of streaming outlets. If you give me one second.
No problem. Take your time. That's how I found it. Funny enough, someone sent me that there is a documentary about it. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. The story was hard to do. And lo and behold, right there on Amazon, I was like, there it is. So that's how I saw it, was Amazon.
Yeah. I would just go, you know, Amazon's a great way to watch it. It's on, you know, Tubi, if you're familiar with that, that app where you can watch a lot of free movies. And if you're in the library system, it's there as well. So your local library will have digital copies of it. You know, it's in a lot of places. All you got to do is Google it. It'll come up for you. And you can also order a hard copy if you want, right from hexhollowmovie.com. If you're an old school person and you like the DVD or the Blu-ray. So
you don't have it on Beta?
I should transfer it to Super 8.
Listen, I have my reel to reel. I will be happy to play it if you transfer it to Super 8 for me. I would watch that tomorrow and host a viewing party. What's next for you?
What's next for me? Well, you know, I'm working on developing a feature horror film right now. So that's in scripting stage. We have a few drafts and we're just getting that going. And that, you know, it's really hard to get stuff done, but I think this one seems promising. This is a narrative film, not a documentary. And I'm also working on another documentary about film school in the 90s. This is kind of just a personal story about, you know, what it was like to attend film school in the 90s, working with a medium that at the time was dying. You know, I shot on film in film school, and that was right along the time when, you know, all the digital stuff was coming into play. So I got all my film school buddies together, and we're going to talk about that, and we're kind of making that into like a more of a little personal story of what it was like to, you know, be in that world. And it's kind of fun to revisit all that.
That's I'm excited about that one. Kyle Panic and I were in it in the 2000s, but we still shot on beta. So.
Yeah, they upgraded after we left.
Literally the year after we graduated, they finally got some Black Magics in there and stuff, and it was like, where was this? I'm buying mini DV tapes from B&H, trying to shoot.
I'm literally shooting on 16 millimeter film, you know, and they had like a room full of a few Media 100s at the time for editing, and they had one Avid for the you know, for the BF, you know, for the fine art students. you know, we couldn't. I had to edit on film. It was crazy.
Man, bust out the zebra tape, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez, Shane, you've been a great person to chat with. I advise all my children tonight to go check out the Hex Hollow Murder documentary. It's so good. It really is. And Shane is very talented at what he does. It shows the passion in the project. And I hope to see this at some film festivals. Is that coming up? Sundance, perhaps?
It's not coming up. You know, this was released in 2015.
Sure.
I forego the festival route. I wanted to just get it out there. I didn't feel like it was very much of a festival type film. Maybe I was wrong, but I just wanted to get it out there and self-distribute and honestly start trying to make some of my money back.
That makes sense.
I didn't have any investors on it.
You could be the first Bob after Dark Film Festival. Do it here in the studio, and there all of like five people show. We'll show that, and we'll show the Bell Witch documentary that came out recently, and that we'll run with it.
Oh, there's a Bell Witch documentary that came
Absolutely.
Out recently.
That wasn't Small Town Monsters. I can't remember who did that, but that's out. I saw that actually after I finished your film. That came up as my recommended film on Amazon.
I need to watch. Yeah, I need to see that. I like that story as well.
And there's another documentary film team called Small Town Monsters that are literally putting out documentaries about cryptids in small towns. And it's their whole series made by Seth Greenlove. And he's great. I was just on his Mothman one that was being shot here in Chicago. And it's fun to see that kind of a thing, because it's giving these paranormal stories and some of these like really local legends a chance to flourish and, you know, public limelight. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for what you did with this documentary. I'm not from the area, but for somebody that studies the paranormal and the occult and the weird world that falls around it, and I made my entire career on this, it's really cool to see that people like you are out there that are putting these stories to public light in a visual medium. I'm just audio, so it's nice to see someone put in that effort. So thank you for what you did with this documentary.
Well, thanks so much for finding it. It's exciting that you discovered the documentary, not being from the area. So anybody that can find this story that's not from the Pennsylvania or surrounding areas, it's great, because it's an interesting story, and I think it needs to be heard, because there's a lot of relevance to it today if you really think about the themes within the story. So I appreciate you guys reaching out to me, and I was thrilled to talk about it with you.
Absolutely. Where can people find more of your work at, and chat with you maybe on the Twitterverse? Where can people find your work?
You can find my work on my website, which is currently under construction. Well, it's there, but it's being redesigned at fstylemedia.com is my production company name, and that's where I house all my editing work, as well as upcoming projects and things like that.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Count Panic, you got any closing words?
No, it's fantastic, Shane. Thanks for coming on.
Shane, thank you. I hope you enjoyed your time on Bob After Dark as much as we enjoyed having you.
I very much did, and I appreciate it, guys. And good luck with the with your ongoing journey into the paranormal.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Maybe you could shoot the Bob After Dark documentary.
There we go. Let's do it.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye.
All right. Count Panic, why don't we take a quick break?
Yes.
And when we come back, we're going to do some spooky news stories and probably take that call from either Rick or John. Regardless, Children of the Night, stick around. We'll be right back. And for our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a show that you should listen to. Stay tuned.
Listeners, this is Piedmont Montgomery of Volumes of Fear. Volumes of Fear is a scripted horror comedy podcast presented by Crimson Knight Productions. If you enjoy tales of terror and the macabre, then Volumes of Fear is certainly for you. Listen now on Apple Podcast or at soundcloud.com/volumes of fear. Find Volumes of Fear and try to survive the terror that it bestows.
And we're back. Hey, Count Panic.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Oh, it's doing good. What did you do during break?
During the break, well, I started the production of the Bob After Dark movie.
The Bob After Dark narrative movie or the documentary?
No, it's going to be a real movie.
Is it going to be like me? It's going to be the murder mystery of me and you like wandering through a haunted house and we find a dead body. It'll be like, it'll be the 2021 Stand By Me.
Yeah, we got a lot of great actors.
Who's playing me?
Well, right now we have Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise is looking to play me or
Tom,
you.
Tom Cruise is looking to play you.
Tom Cruise wants to play me. I was thinking like Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen. Okay. Well, Tom Cruise could play me. We're about the same height.
Tom Cruise or what's his face? Jesse Eisenberg.
Sure.
Jesse Eisenberg could be you, and then Seth Rogen or I don't know. What's the
Seth Rogen's good.
Seth Rogen's good for me, I'd say. He has the same mannerisms. He looks a lot better than me these days, so good for him for, you know, doing what he had to do. Jonah Hill would have been another one for me, I guess.
Yeah, he's still around.
Yeah, so maybe Jonah Hill could play me. That leads to a good question.
I'm still pre-production there, Bob.
You're still in pre-production, but that's good that we were getting auditions already for the Bob After Dark movie. You know what I did during break?
What'd you do?
I actually sat down and I started penning the Count Panic movie. So when we start doing the Bob After Dark cinematic universe.
You're right. They got to come out in order.
We got to come out in order. So it'll start with you because you're, you know, obviously vampire. So
you're right.
You've been around a lot longer than me. And then it goes into the Bob Anderson movie.
Wow.
And then we do the Steve Zandrowski movie, and then the Anthony movie, and the James Peoria movie. Yes. And then we do the Bob After Dark, like, big team-up where we fight Mothman.
The ghost.
Yeah, we come across Mothman, and then we split off into separate movies again, and we'll meet back up.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, could go on for years.
All right, who do we have on the phone? Okay, before you tell me, do you know who it is?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say three guesses.
All right.
John?
Yeah.
Was it John?
Oh, is that your guess?
That's my guess. It's John.
It is John.
Take John, then.
All right.
John, you're on the air.
Hey, I would like to audition for your movie, Bob.
John, who would you play in the Bob After Dark movie?
It wouldn't matter to me. I mean, you know, whatever lines you got that you think that would impress you, then... I'm all for it.
Wouldn't he have to play himself, though?
John plays himself. John plays the disembodied voice the spooky disembodied voice. That's John's role in the movie.
Yeah, I'm not going to, whatever you want, Bob. You know, I'm easy going on that.
What's on your mind tonight, John?
Yeah, you got some interesting guests on there. This gentleman you just had on now, you know, as you always say, on Bob After Dark, there are skeptics and, you know, believers, non-believers, whatever. And you kind of threw that question at him. His story was pretty fascinating on, you know, the scene of the two women dressed in the hats there. But he really emphasized, he came pretty strong on saying he does not believe in Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And we are big on Bigfoot here in Roxana.
Yeah, the Roxana.
My lady of the night didn't hear him say that, but I think she would be wanting to debate him on his existence or not.
Wow.
And he was, and you know what? You came back. I don't know if it was intentionally or not. When he said that he does not believe in Bigfoot, otherwise they would have captured him already. You threw that question at him. Well, what about what you just said about the two ladies? And then he right away said, well, there were three or four other witnesses in the car that seen it. Well, there are all kind of people that, you know, I guess I have to say claim they seen Bigfoot. So what is your take out of what he said about Bigfoot and what he's seen?
It was a hot take.
That was definitely a hot take, but I think it's a fair argument to make, John. I mean, you have to understand, I fall on the believer side. I really do. If anybody ever had a doubt in their mind I fall in the skeptic category. But you have to understand, and it's I have this conversation with Pat from Ghostly often. It's the conversation of proof. And is it harder to be a skeptic or a believer? And Pat would argue that it's harder to be a skeptic because you have to kind of deal with people's like concept of belief, right? And I would say that it's harder to be a believer because you have to deal with the concept of lack there of concrete proof, which is, I think, what Shane was getting at. We don't have concrete evidence. There's not a report going out on CNN or Fox News, whatever you want it to be, saying this is real. Here's the definitive proof of afterlife, Bigfoot, Mothman, whatever. You kind of either believe it or you don't. And I understand where that's coming from. So I say it's a very fair argument. Hot take, yes, but fair, very much so.
Well, very hot, because he didn't mention anybody else but Bigfoot. And you know, when he threw Bigfoot up there, you know, I got a little jumpy, and
he singled him out.
And yeah, you know, he singled Bigfoot out, and sometimes those are some fighting words, Bob. You know, but yeah, I hear what you're saying, but you know, to each his own, I guess. Like you say, either a believer, a skeptic, or
in the middle. And that's the beautiful thing I think about my show and how I handle my fan base, because I have skeptics that are fans, and I'm talking like the hardcore skeptic. I don't believe in anything that's going on, but they still listen to the show, and I can appreciate their viewpoint, because if everybody was the same, I think my show would get a little boring after some time.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% with you on that. Even the guest you had last week and was very interesting. And, you know, if you're going to have upcoming guests, I'm sure they're going to be the same. So you got to, you know, you're having a variety, and everybody's got their opinions. And that's why you have guests, right? If it, like you said, if everybody was on the same page, then wouldn't be much of a show. But, yeah, very interesting guest. I did, you mentioned the Harvest Moon being out tonight. I don't know about tonight, but I did take some pictures of it last night. It was pretty quite clear. I haven't looked out there tonight, but
it's still going on. If you talk to the right practitioner of the craft, they will tell you that the full moon will last tonight as well. So you guys can go out and throw your moon water out there tonight if you'd like. I'll still count it.
Okay, how about the count? Now, last week he wasn't in the spirit yet because it was 85, 90 degrees out.
That's a good question, John.
Is he acting today over there? Is he, is he howling? I mean, no, I'm not howling, but, I don't know. He might be.
Well, it's cooler where we're filming today. It's, in the 60s, right? Maybe in the 50s right now.
It might be in the 50s right now if I stepped outside.
And it's going to be like that for a couple days here, but, Bob, I'm looking at the extended forecast.
Is it going to get back up in the back of the...
Close to 80 next week. So I don't know if I can get in the spirit just yet.
All right, so you're still not in the spirit. John, I think we need to take Count Panic somewhere to get him in the spirit.
Get me to the pumpkin patch.
Well, you know, there's always Big Frank. He's got a lot of spirits.
He has got spirits.
Get everybody in the spirit over there, whatever you want.
John, thanks for calling in.
Keep it up. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. That was a good call.
Yeah, you know, Bob, and I had this conversation earlier, too. There's a certain style of clothing you wear in the fall, maybe flannels or hoodies. I can't go into that just yet because I know I'm going to have to take them out and take them back off in a couple days. So it's hard for me to get really in the mood when it's not an extended period of being a little chilly outside. So, but soon enough, it will happen. And Bob, he mentioned the guest there. We got another phone call. I don't know who it is.
We're going to take it live. We're gonna live dangerously.
Special announcement later for October.
I do. We're gonna take this call live, and folks, tonight's episode is gonna be a little different. This is more open forum. We're gonna get to some topics. We have some news stories, but this is just my relaxing episode. We almost canceled it because I haven't slept, but it's okay. It's fine. I still wanted to do a show.
The show must go on.
The show must go on. And caller, who are you?
Hey Bob. So you want to talk about sleeping? I had a crazy weekend. It was my wife and I's fifth.
Is this Elliot?
Yeah.
Okay. First off, when I say hello, caller, who is this? And then just skips over the question. I had to take a shot in the dark and say this was Elliot. So, by the way, because I knew you were going to, I wanted you to call into the show this week. I wanted to personally wish you and the missus a happy anniversary.
Thank you. Still recovering from that lack of sleep, obviously.
Yes.
Were you calling at the beginning, Allie? Because somebody was calling at the beginning. I couldn't get to them.
No, this is my first time calling.
That might have been Rick.
Oh, I thought Allie called a couple. I know Rick, but didn't Allie? Allie, this is your first time?
No, Elliot's called in before. Yeah. Okay. He's from ACG Paranormal,
I'm
going to
say
man.
Today, though.
Today, this is his first time calling in today.
I know, but somebody tried to call at the beginning of the show, and I apologize, whoever was calling.
Probably Rick.
There was a lot going on here where the show was getting off the ground, so call back. Rick, if you're still listening.
Yes. No, anyway, go on, Elliot. So how'd you guys celebrate your anniversary?
So we drove out to Ohio, 6 hours, 6.5 hours there.
Oh, yeah, it's a good drive.
We stayed the night at Fairfield Infirmary. We did that pretty much all night. And then we hit Prospect Place the next night. And then that day, we went to Ohio State Reformatory. Then we went to Steel Mansion that night. Then the next day, Licking County Jail, I believe, or the day before. And then we went to MadCon at Madison Seminary. And then the night of the convention, we went to Hillview Manor for an investigation.
So you guys literally did a marathon of paranormal investigations for your anniversary.
So in 4 days, we investigated 48 hours. And we got about 20 hours of sleep.
That is impressive. That is, folks, that is dedication to the paranormal craft. I will tell you, to the hobbyists, to the people that are doing this as a career or trying to do this as a career, y'all should be role model, getting your role model to be ACG Paranormal and their entire team, Ned and Elliot, just saying. That's you guys are my role models now.
I don't know how we do it. Like... It's her. She keeps going. She plans this stuff and plans it out so that we can hit all these amazing places. But we had a really crazy experience at Hillview.
Let's hear it.
Possibly one of the most angry and violent spirits that we've dealt with.
Oh, that's right up our alley. It's never a good investigation until there's some violent spirit around. Tell me all about it. Tell me all about it.
So when we were taking the tour, we walked past a big room, and I stopped Nan and pulled her aside and said, I feel an angry man in that room. And we were with quite a few other people. So at the end of the line of the people walking down that hall, one of the people got attacked by an angry male spirit, a sensitive back there. And then later that night, we were in that same area, and a deep, angry voice kept coming through the spirit box saying it was going to attack Natalie and calling me names, which I don't think we're allowed to say on the radio.
Oh, no, but, don't do that.
But I actually ended up... the spirit also was grabbing women's skirts in that same hallway. There was a lot going on in that hallway. This is one of the only times I've ever had to yell at a spirit, because we were getting through the spirit box that he was bothering the other ghosts there. And they were saying, please make him stop, get him to leave us alone, stuff like that. And it was very intense. That was probably one of the more intense spirit box sessions we've had.
That's interesting. Now I've had to get a little angry with a spirit before, a couple of times in my day, especially the one that started screwing with my ornaments on the Christmas tree and woke me up. I was very mad that night.
But, oh yeah, if they wake me up at night, they got a problem.
Oh yeah, no, they get the dad voice. They get the I'm not a dad, but they get the Bob dad tone when they wake me up in the middle of the night. That just irritates me.
That's one of my deals with the ones that are in our residence. It's don't wake me up at night.
Elliot, I'm gonna wake you up at night. I'm gonna call you in the middle of the night and be like, Elliot, let's get some pancakes.
That would be fine.
So we haven't chatted in a while on the show. What's been going on in your guys' end? By the way, in case the children of the night don't know, this is Elliot from ACG Paranormal. And ACG Paranormal is one of the few paranormal groups that I shouldn't say I get involved with, but I keep up with Elliot on the regular. We talk a lot. And between him and Pete from Northwest Indiana Paranormal, those are the two groups I interact with the most in the paranormal world. So you guys should follow them on social media because they're everywhere. So any social media way you could possibly think of, Natalie probably put them on it. So you could probably find them on MySpace, LiveJournal, Blogspot, fill in the blank. I'm joking, by the way.
Thanks, Bob. We've actually been shooting our intro for YouTube, and me and Nat are preparing to be in a small part in the new Night of the Living Dead movie coming up. So
the animated one?
No, it's going to be live action.
One of my
friends is shooting it. It's a sequel to the original, like the original George Romero.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm excited to hear that.
And we have so many investigations lined up now because we won two investigations at MadCon. So now we have everything booked for the next like 6 months of go. And then we wanted an investigation in Oklahoma. So next year we're going to be heading down there and probably New Orleans and just craziness.
You're going to New Orleans? I'm jealous. Count, can we go?
I think it's in the budget, Bob.
It's in the budget.
Get a van. Just jump in a van. We'll rent a van. We'll do.
When are you guys going?
Probably sometime in the spring. First weekend of March.
That sounds. No, I have OhioCon the last weekend of February. I don't know if that would work, but.
We want an investigation at Broken Bow in Oklahoma, so we figured it's only a couple more hours to drive down to New Orleans afterwards. So
same in Ohio. Ohio's close to New Orleans, I think, right?
What?
No, Oklahoma.
I know. I know.
Count Panic, you have a famous line. If I had the Easter Island Massacre, you had, what was it, the 52 states?
The 52 states, Bob.
The 52 states, or the mountain disintegrated, or how'd you say it?
Oh, evaporated? Evaporated. But I don't have a t-shirt for mine.
I have it. There's an actual t-shirt floating around with my blunder from the podcast. You can. Oh. Ghostly Podcast has a store that says.
Perfect.
I'll let you get back to the show, guys.
Well, thanks, Ellie, for calling in and sharing a paranormal experience with us.
You guys have a great night.
Absolutely. Now, Count Panic, we got a little bit of time left in the show. You want to do some spooky news stories of the week and make our announcement about October?
Which order do you want to do that in?
You want to announce October 1st?
Probably we should.
Let's announce October 1st.
We're at that point in the show.
Yeah, we're at the point in the show. We're going to do some spooky news of the week, and we're going to wrap it up. But let's talk briefly about what we're doing for October. Every October we do some kind of theme, and this is going to be our third October together, our second year anniversary. Mm-hmm. This first year I don't think we had a theme because it was brand new.
We were like a week away from Halloween, right?
Yeah, something like that when we first started. One year, and I don't remember what else we did, but we did the classic horror movie monsters last year.
Yeah.
And relating them back to actual lore. This year we're doing something real special. We have caller.
Yeah?
We have a caller?
No.
You're stretching your wrist over the phone.
I'm stretching my arm. I'm excited about the announcement.
Okay, so we're doing exorcisms this month, or not, well, in October when you guys are listening to this. So we're doing exorcism month, and we are actually going to be speaking to people who have performed exorcisms.
Yes.
Yes. We have a caller.
We do, but go ahead.
Okay. So our first, I'm not going to share who the guests are yet, but we have somebody that performed a high mega level exorcism that has reached like national news. We're very excited about that one. And then the second one was somebody very interesting I found online that agreed to come on the show. That's from a different viewpoint than you would have probably ever imagined. Mm-hmm. But we're excited to have him on, and then working on getting a so we have the idea is that we're having exorcism. We're talking about exorcisms from a spiritual point of view. So we have the first person who performed a Catholic exorcism. We have somebody who studies, I won't say what, but then we're working on somebody else that does another form. So we're doing three versions of exorcisms in three different eyes of faith. And the first one, we're doing the Catholicism. That's all I'm going to tell you.
There we go.
But it's a massive major news story about that one. And that's going to be one of the biggest episodes of Bob After Dark I think we've ever done.
Yeah.
So that's going to be huge when we get that one done.
And we can't neglect next week. Some great guests coming up next week as well. JC and company.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a second, too. But we got a caller.
Am I jumping the gun?
You're right. Jumping the gun. Take the call.
Take it live.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey there, guys.
Oh, hey there.
I was waiting for you to say, oh, hi, and who is this?
Is this, hold on, based on the voice, this is James from Peoria, isn't it?
Yeah, how'd you know?
I recognize the voice.
Wow.
Hey, James.
Great to be recognized. Oh, hey there, guys. I just wanted to call in and wish you and the Count and all your listeners and your podcasters happy and joyous Mabon.
You know, you jumped the gun, so now you're forced to talk about it, because that was going to be the one quick topic we talked about this evening. So why don't you share it from a witchy persuasion standpoint on what the fall harvest means to you, and what's something that somebody could do to get into the spirit that's not, you know, that's curious about the craft. And I'm not talking about the mac and cheese.
I was hoping you were talking about the mac and cheese. I jumped into my spiritual library to dig up some quick info, because as you know, I'm a terrible witch.
And, are you a good witch or a bad witch? I'm a terrible witch.
Terrible witch. Just awful at it. So Mabon, which I've heard on a different podcast that the name was made up in the 1970s. It's been a Sabbat for a long time, but somebody was like, well, this one doesn't have a name. It needs a name. That's just what I've heard. I don't know how true that is, but it's the day of great gratitude. Without gratitude, we have empty fingers. We give thanks for each other, for the harvest, for the days that we have been given, that we gather much like grain. Mabon is known as Witch's Thanksgiving and is a day filled with rituals of abundance, the harvest, and gratitude. Of course, it happens on the autumnal equinox, and it's a good time for reflection. Some of the traditions of Mabon are known to honor the goddess as she goes into the underworld each autumn before her return in the spring. Of course, that's referencing the ancient Greeks and the tale of Persephone, but also in Celtic tradition, the god of fertility, Sir Nunons, went into the underworld at Mabon and would return during Ostara or Beltane as the green man. So it's a day of giving thanks for all the good that's happened, for whatever you've harvested that you've been working hard for throughout the year. And so like some of the things your listeners can do is black tourmaline is a really good and special stone for those who are empathic to keep in their pockets. It's especially good for spell work and protection. I use black tourmaline myself all the time. It kind of helps keep you grounded, and black stones are often used as forms of protection. For those of you of your listeners who are of the witchy's persuasion, for Mabon, I've heard it both ways, You can light an orange candle on your altar. It's a color of the harvest, of bounty, of plenty, and can also help attract as such. So for a ritual, you honor the harvest, say thanks, practice arts of gratitude, come together, explore duality, experience passion, build an altar for the bounty, incorporate vines and foods and stuff like that, and prepare for the descent into the altar. Toast to prosperity, build a cornucopia, walk through a cornfield at night, and just kind of listen, just experience the waning of summer as we head into autumn and the winter will come.
That's a beautiful ceremony there, James. I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yeah, well, I just want to say, you know, I'm very thankful to have you and Count Panic as friends, and I'm really thankful for everything I've been given as really gifts this year.
The only thing out of that I would say no to is probably wandering the cornfield at night. I don't know, man. I grew up in Indiana. Listen, Indiana is the corn state, and I don't know if y'all have ever been to a cornfield, let alone a cornfield at night. It is an unsettling feeling, especially when you hear the corn stalks chatter in the wind. I'm out. Bye.
Well, maybe it kind of blurs the lines between our world and the next. You know what I mean?
It sounds like a horrifying experience to me.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It does get unnerving.
It does. It's that chatter. And, you know, listen, guys, children of the night, you have to know. I'm not afraid of many things. Things don't bother me.
You're afraid of corn.
I don't know what it is. Corn.
And dolls,
yes. But it's just something about being in those cornfields and you hear the chatter in the wind. That scares me.
Only at night or during the day, too?
During the day is unsettling. At night, I am almost in anxiety mode.
Yeah,
it might be wiser for, you know, people like me who live out in the sticks. We're kind of used to it.
Yes, the stick switch.
If you're from the city and you don't want to wander in the corn, don't, because it is genuinely easy to get lost in a cornfield.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, James from Peoria. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys have a great night.
And you too. Bless Mabon.
Blessed Mabon.
There you have
that
it.
Was, you know, nice. That's got you know I had a whole thing I was going to talk about tonight, and James knocked it out of the park.
Well, now
I didn't
I'm
have
in
to
the
do
spirit,
that.
Bob. Now I'm in the spirit.
You're in the spirit?
That got me in the spirit.
That got you in the spirit.
But how about corn mazes?
I've done them. I've been forced into them.
Yeah,
they're
a little easier to navigate.
A little spooky. I'm telling you, that noise in the wind that corn makes is scary.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Children of the Corn, I guess it's a movie that bothers me.
Laughter in that corn.
It's got me a little spooked here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I got the goosebumps. All right. Now Count Panic.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of time left in the show.
We do.
Normally, I'd say let's do the lore of the week. I think this week, let's switch it up a little bit. How about a news article?
Sure.
How about a spooky news article about the one thing you probably wouldn't have expected in the news article from me?
What?
Written by our old pal Tim Banal of Coast to Coast AM. This article says, new homeowner finds creepy doll with eerie message behind wall.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
I found this article and I wanted to skip it. I wanted to, but I'm like, that would be a disservice to my fans. A new homeowner in England was understandably taken aback when he discovered a creepy doll with a rather eerie note written behind a wall in his residence. The unsettling find was reportedly made last Friday as Jonathan Lewis was settling into his new house in the city of Liverpool and noticed a mysterious wire sticking out of a spot under the stairs that appeared to have been boarded up at some point in the past. Curious about the purpose of the wire, he proceeded to make a hole in the wall and subsequently spotted a rag doll sitting on the floor inside a small cavity that had been hidden by plasterboard. All of that was not unnerving enough. Alongside the toy was a worrisome message for the new homeowner. The spooky note began thanking the reader for freeing me and went on to reveal that my name is Emily. My original owners lived in this house in 1961. The weird message then took a chilling turn as Emily explained that, quote, I didn't like them, so they had to go. All they did was sing and be merry. It was sickening. Stabbing was my choice for death for them. And I hope you do have, son. I do hope you have knives. After that chilling confession, the message concludes with a presumably sarcastic, "Hope you sleep well." As one might imagine, Lewis was initially put off by the ominous note, but he later determined that it was likely a receiving end of a very elaborate prank. Upon checking with his realtor and some of the new neighbors, Lewis learned that the area of the house where the doll had been discovered was only renovated about 4 or 5 years ago. As such, he concluded that the discovery was actually just a payoff to a prank that someone had set in motion back when the construction was done. Although some of his friends have jokingly suggested that Lewis should just sell the house and escape the haunted doll, the new homeowner has a sense of humor about the whole affair, and indicating that he actually made plans for a Halloween party with Emily serving as the guest of honor.
Terrifying.
Thank you, Tim Benall, from Coast to Coast AM for that share. Absolutely not.
Well, yes.
Listen, I'm going to be completely honest with you, Count Panic. If I was doing renovations in a home I just bought, and I'm tearing down a wall, and if behind that wall I look in there and I see a doll, you want to know the first thing I'm doing?
What's that?
Well, there's three things that come to mind. One, burning down the house. Two, calling the Des Plaines Ghostbusters to come and take care of the problem. Ben and Rinker and House Matt and everybody. So that would be an option for them to come and take care of the problem. Three is to sell the house. Four, just put that board right back up. I didn't need to knock down that wall.
No, well, and a guy like you, Bob, I mean, dolls, you just mentioned corn, but dolls, first and foremost, your biggest fear.
Oh, dolls are my big
fear.
Forget
it. That's not, you don't need a house like this.
If I opened up a wall or I tore down a wall and that's what I saw, absolutely not. That isn't my house anymore. No. That's whatever that thing's house is, and it could have it. I'll find a new house. It's not the market for it, but someday it'll be an okay market again. And if that's the case, then I'll be okay. But for the moment, nah, that house isn't mine anymore. That thing is not welcome.
No, and you're right for that, Bob. It's best that those things, well, I guess, remain in the walls, I guess you could say. Just remain in the walls. Keep it in the walls, Bob. But no, you don't need that in your life. And then on top of that, you got the corn talking in the background in the fields. It's just it's a mess for you, Bob. It's a mess for you.
Absolutely not. So what's your take? Hashtag panic's take.
Like, well, I too. You know, Bob, people make a big deal about you being afraid of dolls. They are terrifying. They're uneasy. I mean, just look at them and they start to make you feel a little queasy. So I don't blame you for being afraid of them, being terrified of them. And again, people love these things. They collect them. They have rooms filled with them. If that's what you like, that's what you like. It's not for me, and I know it's not for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was a spooky PSA, and I appreciate that. Yeah. Why don't we finish up with one more story,
sure,
and then we're going to call it a night. But this next story is actually it's more of a PSA than anything, and I'm pretty grumpy about it. Once again, written by Tim Benall from Coast to Coast, most haunted village in England, plagued by littering ghost...
What?
Dot, 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 hunters.
Oh.
The proprietors of the patch of forest said to be located in the most haunted village in England say they have been battling a problem where more something a little worse than sinister spirits. Ghost hunters who have been leaving the area strewn with litter. According to a local media report, legend has it that the community of Puckley is home to about 12 different ghosts, including an eerie entity known as the Red Lady, a phantom highwayman, and a variety of other chilling apparitions reported over the years. Back in 1989, it was lawfully titled the most haunted village in England by no less than the authority of that of the Guinness Book of World Records, and since then, the community has been known to become a popular destination for those to encounter something supernatural. However, Plucky's spooky reputation has become somewhat problematic in recent years, specifically when it comes to paranormal investigators visiting the village and setting up camp within a forested area of the community known as Daring Wood, where it believed that some of the spirits reside. Alas, it would appear that these ghost hunters frequently fail to abide by leave no trace ethos, and instead depart the area with garbage and, in some case, unwanted camping equipment littered throughout the ground. While the imaginative individuals might suggest that this is because the spirits scared them away so badly that they had to flee at the moment's notice, local officials chalk it up to their actions to be simply just thoughtlessness. Visitors to an area seem to have no regard to or for the woodland, lamented area politician Kat Hoyle, and have resulted in the Woodland Trust needing to close our car park to stop visitors from assessing the woods. She went on to declare that due to the irresponsible nature of these ghost hunters, it is an essential measure to try and protect the wildlife. Absolutely correct. Although the parking area for the woodland has been closed to the public for a few months now, officials concede that it's a temporary solution and have pledged to work with police to put an end to the polluting paranormal investigators. And with Halloween fast approaching, officials in Puckley find the prospect of cleaning up after visitors far more fearful than the ghost that called the community home. Normally, I would pass it off to you for the hashtag panic stake, but let's get on Bob's soapbox quick here before I let you go. Can you not? Listen, paranormal investigators, I am right there with you. I am in your community. I am in your hobby. I'm in your lifestyle. I'm all about going to a really scary place, especially considered by the Guinness Book of World Records, the most haunted village, etc. I get it, man. And sometimes you need to take a break out in the woods, or sometimes you need to stake out a spot. I get it. You're going to have to take a break. You're going to set up shop, set up camp, whatever you want to say, wherever, regardless. Why are you littering? Why are you destroying that poor land by throwing your garbage on it? There's no reason for it. Throw it in a garbage bag and bring your garbage bag with you. I'm not the biggest environmentalist in the world by any means, folks. I'm not perfect, neither are you, but can you not? That's just horrible. This is a legitimate place where people like live, one, and two, this is a place where like the wildlife are at. And you're literally destroying a spot that's probably extremely beautiful. I'm not familiar with it. I'm going to look into it. Maybe I'll do an episode about it just to prove a point, but can you not? The same thing goes for people that go in like abandoned or haunted places when they're investigating and they like tag it up or graffiti. I don't know, something like that. Just go in and do your thing. I understand like urban exploration, you're going to tag things up. That's fine. But I don't know, man. Don't go destroying these beautiful places and properties. You're going to ruin it for everybody by simple thing. Clean up after yourself. Like, seriously, just clean up after yourself. I'm asking you nicely.
There you go.
Hashtag panic stick.
Like Smokey the Bear, but not with fires, but littering out there. Here's the thing, Bob. When you first mentioned that story, you kind of paused. You kind of spooked me for a second because you said littering ghost. Then you paused and said ghost hunters. Now, if we had littering ghost.
Oh, I'm going to go fight them.
That would be a problem as well. I mean, littering ghost hunters, they should know better. They should clean up after themselves, even if you're not a ghost hunter. You've got garbage cans around you for a reason, but you could stop them. You could say, hey, come on, pick up your trash here. How do you stop? And I'm being serious when I say this, Bob. How do you stop a littering ghost?
Ghost trash cans and recycling bins.
I guess so, because like, they don't know any better. And it's like, it's tough to, well, they should know better. They used to be alive, but maybe they forgot being on the other side. I don't know. But yes, for the ghost hunters, clean up the trash.
Just bring a garbage bag. Please, just bring a garbage bag. It's not that hard, guys.
Yeah.
I don't like people littering, period, let alone
this goes for everybody.
That's exactly it. But littering in a place that's like, you're going to ruin investigations for everybody. I just, that's my point. Like, just clean up after yourselves. You should be ashamed of yourself for destroying that property with your garbage. It'd be a big difference to like, I don't know, I won't go into it, but if there's waste or something, yeah, obviously. Yeah. But no, you're destroying it. Stop being dumb.
As the old saying goes, Bob, give a hoot, don't pollute.
Good job, Count Panic.
That's my word of advice.
Let's end the show with a 5-star review. That's something that's not on Apple Podcasts.
Wow.
One of our fans sent in a thing saying, hey, I couldn't figure out the Apple Podcast review system, so I found you on podcastaddict.com.
Oh.
And podcastaddict.com has a reviewing system that you can, well, leave a review for.
Wow.
And this comes to us from Windstorm YT. Bob, I hope you see this. This podcast is awesome. Bob and Panic are always a delight to hear. Bob is very knowledgeable, and I've learned things about the paranormal that I never knew before. I discovered this podcast a while back, and I've been hooked ever since. Keep up the good work, Bob. John. So John, thank you so much for the night.
It's not our John.
I don't think it's our. Does John know how to access a podcast?
I don't know. I know he knows how to access a radio.
That's why we get John every week.
But they say we're big with the John demographic. So thank you, John.
John, we appreciate the message. Count Panic, quick cheers, John.
Yes, I'm going to cover up my bottle.
To you, John, thank you so much for the nice review. We appreciate it. We haven't pitched the review thing in a while. Cheers to you, John, by the way.
Cheers to you. I'll do this without product placement. Cheers.
Yes, good job. So, folks, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can leave us a review apparently on Podcast Addict. Leave a review and get a cheers from Count Panic live on air. Yeah, thank you, John.
Pretty good.
All right, Count Panic, before we let you go and we get your closing statement of the evening, next week we have a paranormal investigator, two paranormal investigators, and two paranormal podcasters, both two of the same people, are actually coming on the show next week. Are they coming in studio, do you know?
They might be, actually. I got to confirm with them.
Well, either way, we have a very special treat for you guys. We have Andy Collins and JC Resitas, which you guys might remember JC from a while ago, back when we had him on the show.
Also a filmmaker as well.
Also a filmmaker. He did paranormal documentary filmmaking. He's a paranormal investigator, and him and Andy have a really cool, narrative-driven paranormal podcast. It's not like we do informative. It's narrative. It's story driven. And I might actually know a voice on there coming up for an episode.
Really?
Yeah. We'll talk about that next week. So stick around. Next week's going to be a fun episode. We're looking forward to that one. Kyle Panic, do you have any closing words for our show tonight?
Well, Bob, as we wind down, as we are filming this, a couple hours left of summer. It's been a great one, but now we look forward to the fall solstice. The veil is that its thinnest, Bob.
It's getting thin.
It's getting thin?
It's getting thin. It's not its thinnest yet.
Put your moon water out, folks.
Get your moon water out. Thank you so much, folks, for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.